Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what is up, guys? Welcome to Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 65. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Guys, I had a few weeks off of Advices Radio, the program itself, and that was just me sorting out some personal stuff. But hey, I'm back. Glad to be here. We still had all our other programs. We still had Muscle Minds and Clinical Muscle and Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I think we even snuck a Strength Depositions in there. So guys, glad to be back. Glad to be with you. Thank you for listening to the program. Feels good. Feels good to be here. We've got a bunch of new cool stuff lined up. The show is back. We're going to continue plowing through 2018 like it's nobody's business. Today we have with us John Hansen. He's going to talk with Vijay Puri and I about his new book, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. This guy is amazing. And honestly, I'm going to tell you right now, no kidding, this has been one of my favorite interviews that I've done in quite a while. I'm really excited about it. And I think that it all comes together so well. I'm kind of a perfectionist with this stuff, and I really enjoyed doing this show. I think that you guys will enjoy it too. If you're not following us on social media, check out at Advices Radio Network on Instagram. We've got contests, we've got polls in our Instagram stories, all sorts of cool stuff that's going on there on a semi-regular basis. So take part in all of that. And while you're at it, go over to advicesradio.com/shop and you can support the network by buying a t-shirt. That helps us to continue bringing the show to you. You're like $25 and that's shipping included. Great racer backs for girls made out of really thin material. It's really nice. Same deal with the men's t-shirts. It's an awesome tri-blend. Really cool taper and fit on the sleeves. You guys will enjoy the shirts. And like I said, it helps to go support the network. So guys, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for following along on social media. Here's John Hansen. More to come. Here we go. Welcome back to Advices Radio. Guys, today I have with me a couple of really cool dudes. I'm really excited about this. First of all, I've got my cohort from Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, Vijay Puri. Vij, thanks for being with me today.
Hello, Advices Radio audience. You can't get rid of me.
Well, thanks for being with me, man, because this is really exciting. And together we are once again going to talk to Mr. Natural Olympia, John Hansen. He has a new book that came out. It is called The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. I'm actually holding it in my hands right now. John sent a copy. Okay. Yeah. John sent a copy to Vij and I. We are going to dig into this. It's a cool book. We wanted to talk about that. And plus, hell, it's just another great excuse to get to talk to John. John, thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
So, you know, the first thing I wanted to ask you, John, I have been watching your social media. You know, I've been watching it nonstop for a while, but in the past week, you had the opportunity to head out to the West Coast. You were hanging in Gold's. You were hanging in Venice. What took you out there?
Old School Labs, the company I work for, they wanted to do some interviews with some of the old school guys. You know, they just hired Tom Platz and Samir Banood on the, cool. And Breon Ansley, of course, is with them, and Rick Drayson. So they thought it'd be cool to have me come out there and do some interviews. They sponsor my podcast as well. So, and then we just went to Gold's and just sort of played it by ear and just saw who we could see, you know, and just did interviews with whoever was there. So it was really cool. It worked out really good.
Man, that's awesome. Now, I was out in Gold's last year around September. I was actually doing my final pump up or my final depletion workout before I competed in the Titan Classic. And I was with a friend of mine and she said, Scott, behind you. And I'm thinking, well, I'm trying to finish my set. And I see something like a shadow walk by me real quick. And I finish my set and I look up and it was Tom Platz. It's the only time I've ever seen him in my life. Man, that was so cool. I got to ask you, though, John, how are his legs today? Because he was covered up when I saw him. Does he still have the legs?
I couldn't see him either. I was sitting right next to him at the restaurant, but he had those board shorts on, and so I couldn't see.
Okay. I saw you got a chance to do some training. You were training with Samir?
Yeah, so they wanted us to do a back workout together, and Samir's like, well, you know, I used to do barbell rows with 465, and I'm like, oh, man. He didn't have a belt with me or anything, so... we didn't go heavy, though. We just did we did barbell rows. We were putting those fake 25s on, you know, the big 25s.
Oh, yeah.
So it looked like 45s. It looked like we were doing 225, but it was only like 50 pounds, you know?
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, it looked heavy in the picture. I didn't actually, like, break it down and do any counting.
Well, then we went outside and we did T-bar rows, and I did put four plates on, and I got 20 reps. So those are real weight. Was real 45. So.
Hell, yeah.
Got inspired. I was warmed up by that point.
Nice.
So was it, John, was it after your workout with Samir, was that when you guys decided to head over to the firehouse? Because was that planned at all, or was that just that? Because that picture was fucking epic.
It was.
I saw that. Yeah. I just about peed myself. I was like, that's just a lucky guy right here.
Yeah, that was planned. That was on Saturday, actually.
Uh-huh.
So I went over to Gold's and just checked it out, because I haven't been to Gold's Gym in probably 7-8 years. Okay. And, so I went up there, and my friend Aaron Reed, you guys probably seen pictures of him, the real big guy. He's like 6'7", 300 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And he used to live in Tampa, so he moved out to California like 9 months ago. So I went up and saw him, and then I headed over to the firehouse, and then all those guys were waiting. Tom Platz, Samir, Rick Drayson, Breon Ansley. So, yeah, that was cool. And they were filming it all and recording everybody. We were all mic'd up, you know. Record all of our conversations and stuff. So that was really cool.
That's cool. In a million years, would you have ever guessed that one day you would get to go to the firehouse of all places, sit down and have breakfast with Tom Platz, Samir Banood, and all these legends?
It's unbelievable, because I grew up reading about those guys when I was a kid, you know, and now I'm working out with Samir and talking to Tom Platz about the 81 Olympia. It's just unbelievable. Oh, and I also worked out with Phil Williams, who was another.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up admiring him in the magazines, too. I remember when he won the 85 Nationals, and then he won the Chicago Pro Show. So he got inducted into the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame, which they did on Memorial Day. And so I went and saw that. And then he said, hey, you want to work out tomorrow? I'm like, yeah, for sure. So he goes, okay, I work out at 4 o'clock in the morning. He goes, I'll pick up at 3:45. Oh. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah. You can't say no, though. What are you going to do?
No. You know, so I went. It was dark out, and him and his wife picked me up, and we got to Gold's before they even opened. Like, there were people waiting outside, you know.
Wow.
So we did back on Tuesday, and then we went back on Wednesday and did chest. But he goes pretty light. You know, he's never been a heavy trainer. Even, like, when he was in his prime, he never really trained heavy. He just, like, really feels the movement. Mm-hmm. So I just did the exact weight he was doing. It was really lightweight, so it wasn't that bad.
Man, it sounds like just a hell of a week. I was living vicariously through you.
It turned out way better than I thought it would. It was just awesome. Every day was great.
That's so cool.
So, you know, we had you back on here, John, because we wanted to talk about your book. Once again, thank you for giving copies to both VJ and I. I've been enjoying it, too. This has been my cardio material. I do.
Scott?
What's that?
Did you finish it?
I haven't finished it. No, I've been I got through like 3/4 of the book, and then I stopped and started jumping to the end and reading pieces. So I've honestly probably missed maybe 2 chapters tops, but I'm gonna have to go back and finish those. I just started jumping around because I wanted to get the interview going, and I've been enjoying it so much. I do this weird thing when I really like a book. I don't want to finish it. I don't want it to end. And then I start reading it slower and slower, and I'll like savor 2 pages and then wait a little while and savor 2 more. So, but it's been a really fun read. There's so much that Vij and I want to get into here. But for starters, I want to back us all the way up here. And this is just to take us to like the roots and the beginning here of natural bodybuilding. John, what is natural bodybuilding, and what does that mean to you?
Well, I always believed in bodybuilding is just building your physique through willpower, you know, through training, through nutrition, And of course, the drugs came into it at some point. But what really attracted me to bodybuilding in general was the discipline and the willpower and the power of the mind and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was a kid and I got involved in bodybuilding, I was kind of a shy kid. I read comic books a lot and I really didn't play a lot of sports. You know, I maybe fooled around playing basketball a little bit, you know, in my driveway, but never really played any organized sports or anything like that. So I was kind of looking for something to get into when I got into bodybuilding, and I got into it young. I got into it at 13 years old. And when I got into it, I just really, really loved the idea of pushing yourself and the discipline that was involved with the diet and the discipline that was involved with the training. And that's what really attracted me to the sport. So the idea of using drugs to build your body, that never really appealed to me. And I understood at a young age that bodybuilders were taking drugs, because I read about it in the magazines and stuff. And I just was attracted to the idea of using, you know, Frank Zane was the guy who won the Olympia that year, the year I got involved in bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. And I remember every month in Muscle Builder, he would write articles, and it was all about goals and visualization and dreams. And it was so much mental. Mm-hmm. I just don't see that anymore. And that's what really attracted me to the sport. And of course, Arnold was a big proponent of thinking positive and visualization and setting goals. So it was that whole aspect of just the hard work and the discipline involved with bodybuilding that attracted me to the sport. So natural bodybuilding is doing it with just the training, just the nutrition, and of course the mind as well. And you're not using the drugs as an adjunct, or you're not using them as a substitute for the hard work. You know, you just really have to develop your body through hard work and through nutrition and through training. And so I guess that's what natural bodybuilding is to me. It's sort of a throwback to what bodybuilding should be.
Yeah. And regardless whether you use drugs or not, I mean, that stuff, everything you're talking about, really, it is the foundation. And I think that's the stuff that Vijay and I really try to talk about a lot on our programming, is that, hey, even if you're going to use that stuff, you got to do the stuff that John's talking about first. That's the foundation. Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Absolutely. John, did you find that as a young man? I mean, you started competing. Your first contest, I was in 79, correct? As a teenager? Yeah. How long were you training before you decided to start competing?
Well, I think I started lifting weights when I was 13, and I was just doing a full body workout, you know, with the 110-pound weight set that I got for Christmas. And then when I was 14, that's when I really said I want to be a bodybuilder. So I guess from 14, 15, so about 2.5 years. Because I was 16 when I did that contest.
And how did you respond just as a natural, with your own natural hormones? Because man, you're right at 14, 15, you're pretty ripe with the testosterone, you know. And sure. So I mean, once you're a horny teenager, but you're putting it you're chasing girls, but you're chasing weights instead. Your body can really respond really nicely. So did you find that your body just responded really, really well just to the weights by itself?
Well, I was 135 pounds when I started at 14, at 5'8", the same height I am now. And I didn't know how to train. So I was reading the book Pumping Iron, and they said Arnold trained 6 days a week, twice a day. So I said, okay, that's what I'll do. So I set my alarm clock early every day, and I got up before school and went in the back room of our house and worked out for an hour, then ate breakfast and went to school. And then when I got home from school, I would work out again for another hour and a half. So I was training twice a day, 6 days a week. And then about, I don't know, 8-10 months later, I read in Muscle Builder, somebody asked Arnold a question about getting big. And he said, no, for building size, you only want to train 4 days a week. Training 6 days a week is just pre-contest. And I'm like, oh, shit, I've been doing it wrong. Then I switched to 4 days a week. But after 1 year of training, I was 155 pounds. So I was 20 pounds heavier, even everything wrong. Great. Just because, you know, I was young and I was, you know, training for the first time. I think that happens to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
So my brother took some pictures of me. So I was doing like a double bicep, lat spread, all that stuff. And I could see that I had the genetics to be a good bodybuilder. But I was just too skinny still. I was only 155 pounds. But I saw I had the muscle shape. I had the bone structure. Mm-hmm. I just had to fill everything out. So that gave me hope. And so when I was 15, after 1 year of training, I kind of felt like I could make it. I knew I had the potential. but it just took a lot of years before I was able to fill it all out and finally achieve it.
Hmm. You know, I'm looking at the book here, John, and the first half of it, the first six chapters, you actually talk about the actual diets you used. You talk about the actual training you did while you were preparing for even your first show. It amazes me that, so you were taking notes all the way back then. It tells me a lot about your mindset. Can you talk a little bit about the way that you organized your process as you competed?
Yeah, I've always written everything down. I've always had training logs. I've always written down my diet. I was doing that for years. And when I started competing in the natural competitions, it became even more important because it was just like you really got to be aware of everything. So I had all my notes and stuff, and I put all that in the book. And I thought it really came out great because I don't remember ever reading a book where people really wrote down everything they did for a competition. And then sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. As you guys saw in the book, there were some shows where I came in flat or some shows where I was holding water. And then some shows I hit it perfect, you know. So that's how I was able to learn by each contest, just going in and trying the different aspects of training and diet and doing things differently. And then the last week, the peaking and all that stuff. And I was able to figure it all out eventually, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, I think the way you laid the book out is it's so easy to read. You know, each of these, at least the first several chapters where you're actually talking about contests you did. You talk about like where you were at when you went into it. You know, the people that you met, the things that you had tried, and then how it turned out. And then you sum it up at the end with the different points, the things that you actually learned, the lessons you learned from it. I find that to be really cool, and it's just such a simple way of laying it out. It really demystifies everything. I think for that reason, it's a great tool, not just for entertainment, but for somebody especially who's looking to kind of, you know, educate themselves. You met a lot of people along the way, and early on, one of the guys that you met was Chris Aceto. I know that, Vijay, you got some questions about Chris too. Can you talk about the influence that Chris had on your bodybuilding? Where were you when you met him, and what did he teach you?
Yeah, well, at that time, Chris was writing a column. I believe it was for Muscular Development, which is funny now because, you know, they all hate Blackman. Him and Dave was, you know, team up on every week.
Yeah.
But I think he had a column in Muscular Development, and he really wrote about nutrition every time. And I really liked his approach because it was very common sense. And I think I bought his books around that time also. So I was a big fan of Chris, just like you guys are. So when I got the opportunity to finally meet him in, I think it was 1994, when I was brought out to Tennessee to guest pose, and Laura Crivell, his wife at the time, she was guest posing also. And I think that was the week after the Arnold, or really close right after the Arnold, and she had won the Arnold that year. And then they also brought out Chris Duffy, who won the Nationals. Won the heavyweight class at the Nationals when John Sherman won the overall. So they brought all those guys out, and I was just so excited. But actually, I was more excited to meet Chris than anybody else. And I was just bugging him the whole weekend. Like every time I would sit down next to him and ask him about this and ask him about that and ask him about all these supplements. And so we sort of had a friendship. And then, of course, this was before the internet or phones or anything. So I would just call him and, you know, and ask him questions. And so he helped me out for several years, you know, whenever I needed any questions. And then in 19, I think it was also 94, later that year, his Mike Francois, who was his client, was competing in the Chicago Pro Show. And I don't know if you guys remember, Mike Francois won like his first three or four pro shows in a row. He was unbelievable. He was just, he won the Night of the Champions. He won the Chicago Pro Show. So while he was in Chicago, I called up Chris and he said, yeah, well, come up to Mike's room. So we went up to his hotel. So it was like me and three of my friends. And we were all going to the contest. And so I remember Mike's laying on the bed, and I'm standing on one side of the bed, and Chris is standing on the other side. He goes, well, take off your shirt. Let me see what you look like. So I'm taking off my shirt. And Mike Francois is laying right in front of me on the bed, and my friends are standing behind Chris looking at me. So then he gave me some advice. And then we all drove them to the contest, or we went to a restaurant or something. So we helped them out. So, yeah, Chris was really, really cool. He was giving me free advice. I wasn't paying for anything, and he was answering all my questions.
Man.
And then when I went in 98 to compete at the Natural Olympia, that was my first time going over to Europe. And I knew I was going to have to bring my food. So I called him and I said, well, you know, how do you do this, man? I mean, how do you bring all your food and everything? So he gave me some great advice. He told me to buy a George Foreman cooker, and I never even heard of the George Foreman cooker before then because I think it just came out. And they had just gotten back, him and Laura had just gotten back from Czechoslovakia, where I think the Miss Olympia was that year. So he was very, you know, they just went through the experience of traveling for like 2 weeks overseas. So he told me exactly what to do, you know, and he said, just buy your protein there at the store and then just cook it on the George Foreman grill. And he said, for carbs, just buy sweet potatoes and go to the hotel kitchen and see if they can boil it. And then cut it up into slices and then just cook it on the George Foreman grill like little potato chips, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. So I went through a lot of different things with that week because we went to Hungary first, and I guest posed with Tito Raymond.
And, no way.
Yeah, because his promoter was this guy named Zolt, which I wrote about in the book. And Michael Hearn was supposed to guest pose with Tito because Zolt had this big team of bodybuilders, natural bodybuilders from Budapest, Hungary. So they were all going to go over to compete in the Natural Olympia because this was the first Natural Olympia. So he had this whole team of competitors that was going over there, and he was holding the Budapest Championships. He was a promoter, and that was going to be on Thursday, and then the Natural Olympia was on, I think, Saturday or Sunday. So Michael Hearn pulled out at the last minute because I think his father was sick or something. So then he called me on Sunday, and I'm supposed to leave on Monday for Greece. And he goes, can you change your flight and come to Hungary? And I'm like, dude, I'm supposed to leave tomorrow, you know? And he goes, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for all the changes and everything. So then he paid for the change, and I went to Budapest, Hungary, and I stayed there for a week with Tito and then my friend Rick Schaff, who's a photographer who I met before. I met him a couple times. So the three of us just stayed out in Hungary, and we stayed there until, I think, Friday, and then we took a plane to Greece, and then we competed in the Natural Olympia together. So we had the Hungarian championships on Thursday, and me and Tito both guest posed. And it was huge. It was a huge show. And they had these huge posters of Tito all over Hungary. Because the guy had a supplement line called SciTech, I think. And Tito was the main guy, you know. So that was pretty.
There was a couple things I noted in the book when it comes to Chris. He introduced you when you were talking about supplements. One of them was glutamine. He introduced you to glutamine powder.
Right.
Is that something that you still use? And also, you mentioned that he influenced the way you looked at carbohydrates. Can you talk about those two things?
Yeah, the supplements was really important because I was always looking for something that could keep the muscle while you're dieting, because you're always, you know, any bodybuilder that competes is always walking a fine line. You always want as much muscle as possible to get ripped, you know.
Especially a natty, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I was always looking. And so one of the best supplements he told me about was creatine. And I think that came out in 94.
Yep.
And that was amazing. I remember when I first tried creatine, I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. It was like my strength went up so much as I was dieting.
Incredible.
But yeah, glutamine was another one because that also held on to muscle tissue. And I was, if you read the book, I was trying all these different supplements that came out, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. They were all supposed to be precursors to glutamine production and to holding on to muscle and things like that. But I remember creatine was one of the most effective ones that I ever tried.
And then how about carbs? You said in the book that once you met Chris, your relationship to carbohydrates changed.
Yeah, I was never a low carb guy. I always ate carbs, but Chris always believed in eating carbs too, because he thought that they were anabolic and you just had to eat them the right way. But he was never a low carb guy, so he always believed in eating carbs. And I remember one of the things he told me, you know, because the carbohydrate depletion and loading was very popular, especially in the 80s, it was very popular. So Chris told me that a better option for me, and he said he tried this with other bigger natural bodybuilders, not smaller guys, but bigger guys. He said, eat more carbs at the beginning of the week and then cut them out or cut them back as the week progresses toward the contest, because that way you'll have the muscle fullness. And then you'll get drier as the contest gets closer because you won't be eating too many carbs. So I actually did do that for the Natural Olympia. And it wasn't by design, really. I was going to carb up a little bit. But we were in Greece, and the place we were staying at was just, It was this small little hotel. I mean, the promoter really saved money by holding this contest in the middle of nowhere. And so there was really nowhere to eat. And they had a grocery store across the street. And I went and bought beef, like big slabs of raw meat, you know.
Whoa.
And I was buying chicken. And I brought it into the hotel room. So I had this raw meat sitting in my hotel room. So I had to cut it up in like little pieces and cook it all because it was all going to go bad. I didn't have a refrigerator in the room. And so I was really starving myself the last couple of days, but it worked out perfect because I remember when we got to Hungary, I was off my diet because we were eating at restaurants. Mm. And this guy Zolt was like, I'll take care of you guys. I'll take care of you guys. I was holding water because then we guest posed on Thursday and I got off stage and I went up to Rick because Rick got a good eye. He's a photographer for Weider and Bob Kennedy and stuff. So he's been in bodybuilding a long time. So I said, how did I look? And he goes, you look good. You're holding a little water. I'm like, oh, no, you got to be kidding me. Seriously, I'm holding water? And he, yeah, it'll be all right. So then the next 2 days, I was just basically starving myself. I was just eating very low carbs and just protein. And I remember, I'll never forget the night before, we're stuck in this little hotel room in Greece. And the bed was the size of a desk. And it was hard as a rock. And it was like such a small room. And I'm sitting there and I'm starving. I couldn't even sleep because I was so freaking hungry. And the only thing I had in my room to eat was we did this appearance at one of his supplement stores because this guy Zolt owned a supplement store. So when we were in Hungary, we did an appearance and he gave me a big tub of protein. So I was so hungry. I opened up the thing of protein and I was licking my finger and just licking the protein.
And I've been there.
Lost it and I did it for like a half hour straight. And I'm like, oh shit, I just blew my diet. It was like maniac. It was crazy. And then the next morning I woke up and I was hard as a rock. And I had Rick take pictures of me. And I think I put one of the pictures in the book where I'm posing on the balcony. And he goes, yeah, you're ready now. You know, there's no water retention now. So
nice.
I peaked perfectly for that, almost by accident.
Yeah, that was back then. What kind of protein was that, by the way? Because that was the early 90s. So had you been introduced to whey protein yet at that point or no?
That's a good question. I think it was whey. I'm not really sure. Yeah. I remember they all had cell phones and they were all texting. And that was 1990.
What?
Yeah, and I remember all those guys from Hungary were – we went to the gym and they're all standing against the wall and I go, what are you guys doing? You know, and they're all texting. I'm like, wow, we had pagers at the time back in 98, you know, yeah. We didn't have cell phones.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But another funny story about Tito, I know you guys like Tito Raymond.
Oh yeah.
That guy I'm a huge fan. Yeah.
Yeah. So we go to the gym on Thursday and we did a photo shoot. And I remember the chick was really hot. She was this girl from Hungary. She was beautiful. I think she was a fitness competitor because that was before figure or bikini came around.
Right, right.
And after we got done with the photo shoot, we were going to work out. So this is only a couple days before the show. So I said, well, I'm just going to do a light shoulder workout. So I just didn't push myself. And Tito goes, I'm going to do legs. So I'm watching him out of the corner of his eye, and he's over there squatting. And he does, you know, 135, 225, 315. I'm like, wow. It's going heavy. We got a contest in a couple of days. Then he puts on 405, no belt, no nothing. And he's doing like, you know, 8 reps easy. Then he puts on 5 plates.
I'm like, God.
You got to be freaking kidding me. This guy's going to be 500 pounds. He's 180 pounds.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like a middleweight almost. And he does it like 8 times.
Oh my God.
Like no problem. That guy is unbelievable. I walked into Gold's last week, the first guy I saw was Tito was against the wall. He's doing, you know, the CrossFitters, how they pull themselves up over the chinning bar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All the way up. Yeah, he was doing those over there. And now he's like almost 50 years old. And he looked the same as he did 20 years ago.
He's incredible. He was a major inspiration for me when I was coming up because I competed as a natty for my entire bodybuilding foray. So, but I looked up to Tito. But actually, Tito and the Boston Mass, he wasn't the Boston Mass back then. Right. He was just little tiny Jose in the light. He was a welterweight or something competing at the, you know, Team USA, whatever, or right. Team Universe, sorry. But yeah, man, I really looked up to Tito, and he was always such a freak yeah. in the gym, just so strong all the time. I kind of developed my own training, like, wow, Tito's so strong. I need to be lifting heavy, heavy, heavy weights if I need to, you know, if I'm going to be getting to look anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a major influence.
And he does triathlons and everything. I mean, he's done CrossFit. He does triathlons. Mm-hmm. He was doing triathlons back in 98.
Wow. He's just a marvel, like a pure athlete. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Not just a good bodybuilder. He's just an athlete altogether.
And he's just got freaky strength. Like, he shouldn't be that strong, but it's just naturally, he's just naturally that strong.
That's so crazy. John, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your dieting back then. As you flip through the book, you know, and you see like the different diets, you know, from like 1979 all the way up to like 1998 or whatever, it's like things get fine tuned a little bit, but it seemed like really rudimentary back in like the 80s and early 70s.
Right.
Like, where did, I don't know, like, how do you feel like your diet has changed and progressed? Because I'm looking right now at the 1992. This is how you were dieting it for, what was it, the Illinois, NPC National Illinois? You had first meal was 10 egg whites, one serving of oatmeal, 1.5 cups of pineapple juice. Anyone reading this would be like, 1.5 cups of pineapple, they would shit themselves, right? They were like, oh my God, this is what kind of diet is this, right? And I like how back then everything was carbo, you know, everything was carbos. Yeah. You had to have pre-workout carbos, you had post-workout carbos,
right?
And a lot of guys were doing, you know, like a carbo drink pre-workout or post-workout.
Right.
You're over here doing 6 ounces of baby food pre-workout.
Right, you know? Right.
And I'm looking at all your diets. I'm going, where's the protein at? Where's the protein? You know, I'm like trying to take it apart. But just describe to me how, like, the progression, how everything is, because I mean, 79 is a very long time ago. And bodybuilding changes every 5 years. There's new stuff you got to learn, new dieting techniques, new things that we learn about the human body. A lot has been learned in between that time period. So how has that kind of affected your dieting from then all the way up until now?
Well, in 79, when I was a teenager, that was, you know, the 70s, early 80s. My metabolism was so fast that I would only have to diet for 3 or 4 weeks for a contest. Oh, and I wish I would have wrote down exactly what I was eating back then, but I didn't write it down back then, but all I remember, it was very low calories, like tuna fish and probably milk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know exactly what I was eating, but it was probably very low carbs, very low calories. And as long as I followed that diet strict for 3 or 4 weeks, I would be ripped. And throughout my teenage years, I would only diet 3 or 4 weeks for a show. And some shows I came in bigger because I wanted to be bigger. But then I would be too smooth, so I didn't place high. And then the shows where I dieted down real low and got really ripped, I did better. But I never won a teenage show in all the shows I did, in those 10 shows I did. Because I think, number one, I competed too often. I was competing like 3 or 4 shows a year, and I did 10 shows in a 3-year period. I would have been better off, looking back now, just doing one show and then just training in the off season and trying to put on size, you know. But I love competing so much. I sort of got hooked on it and let my emotion get the best of me. So I was competing in every teenage show I could. But then I think not many people knew about dieting. We just read in the magazines what to do, and we would talk to other guys at the gym, like, what do you think about this or what do you think about that? There was no coaches back then. There was no personal trainers back then. So you just had to kind of experiment, and you see, some guys would hit it sometimes and some guys would be way off. And the same thing with the tanning, you know, I mean, we all did our own tans. So sometimes guys would come in really bad tans and sometimes guys would come in really good tans. And then as I got into the 80s, the 80s were more complex carbs. Like, all the pros and everybody was eating a ton of carbs. So it went from like the 70s of low carbs, and then in the 80s, everybody was eating way more carbs.
Really?
So moderate protein, real, real low fat, like 10 to 20 grams of fat, and then lots of carbs. And it seems like that's what everybody was doing. And then in the 90s, I can't really remember, but I basically followed the same thing where I responded better to eating more carbs and lower fat. And I think you can see in the book, in those shows I did in the early 90s, the fats were really low. Mm-hmm. And then toward like 96, 98, I started to raise the fats and lower the carbs a little bit. So, because I realized that too low of a fat in the diet, too low of fats is unhealthy, number one. And then I think the body will start to like hold on to fat. So, you got to eat at least the essential fatty acids, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you kind of discovered from an early age that, hey, you needed carbohydrates. That's something that's, you know, a lot of people dieting down today, you know, they're all over the place. Some people need ketogenic type diets. Some people need low carbohydrates. Some people need lots of fats, lots of proteins, just a little bit of carbohydrates. But, you know, you found for yourself that niche where you fell right into the mold of the 80s bodybuilder.
Right,
you know,
right.
When they, you know, everyone's eating lots of carbohydrates, but that shit worked for you. And that's great. I mean, as a natty, that's phenomenal to be able to find that. That's what always worked for me too. I don't know if that's a natty thing or what, but anytime I ate fats, I would just get fatter. I would get bloat, like distended belly, you know, it's just, and I'd hold on to weight like crazy if I kept my fats higher. Did you find that?
I always had a really fast metabolism. So, you know, if you look at the part where like a 96, where I was really bulking up and I got to my heaviest contest weight, I was eating up to 700 grams of carbs.
That's a lot.
So that's what I needed, you know, to, and that was like, my metabolism was super fast up until my 40s. So I remember when I was a teenager, it was like almost impossible for me to put on weight. So the challenge for me was always, you know, getting bigger. And so bulking up for me definitely worked in the off season. I wouldn't recommend that for people that have a hard time losing weight or people that are older. Like, I would never bulk up now. Although I do gain some size and gain weight in the off season, I don't eat as many calories as I did back then. I mean, I was eating almost 5,000 calories at one point.
Wow.
Gaining size. But it worked well for me because the way I looked at it was the more calories I eat, the more carbs I eat, now I have to go to the gym and I have to train heavier. So if I was squatting 450, now I got to get up to 500, you know, and I have to do that because I'm eating so many calories and so many carbs. So then the heavy training would cause more muscle growth, and then I would eat more food again, and then that would replenish the muscle, and then I would get bigger. So it was just the cycle of eating more, training heavier, eating more, training heavier. I think bulking up doesn't work for a lot of people who just eat the food, but they don't do the heavy training. It's like you have an obligation when you eat all that food. You have an obligation to go to the gym and train heavier and harder than you did before, you know?
Right. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. When we get into chapter 6, you were saying it. So this was 96 Natural Universe. You said that you mentioned, what was the term? You said your physique had taken on a domestic look. That you up until that point you had been, you know, on your own schedule. You were living the bodybuilding lifestyle, and then you'd gotten into a relationship, and you were working around other people's schedules, and things weren't necessarily 100% the way you would want them to be. It appears that relationship didn't work out. You moved forward, you got the fire back, and you set a goal to be in shape for the Arnold, to show up there and to look good. Can you talk about that, though? Can you talk about finding that balance between, you know, having relationships outside of bodybuilding and still being the best that you can be?
Yeah. Before that, I was so into bodybuilding. You know, people ask me now, how come you never got married? How come you never had kids? But when I was younger, I was so obsessed with bodybuilding. And I'll never forget this. When I was a teenager, like when I was in high school, my life was bodybuilding. So there was nobody else in high school that was really bodybuilding. In fact, back then, when I went to high school in the late 70s, they didn't even encourage athletes to lift weights. I think the football players did, but no one else was lifting weights. So me being a bodybuilder was really, really different. But I had my own life outside of high school. I didn't go to dances. I didn't go to school events. I didn't hang out with anybody from high school. I went to the gym after I worked out after school. And I would hang out with guys that were in their 20s or 30s. You know, I would hang out with older guys. And I actually started going to parties by the guys from the gym. So I wouldn't go to the people, you know, in high school. And when I was like, I think about 17, there was this guy named Ira Hurley. He was the chairman of the AAU, because it was all AAU back then. He was the chairman of the AAU for Illinois. And he sold posing trunks also. His sister made the posing trunks. So you go to his house and buy the posing trunks, and everybody did it because he was the only one that sold posing trunks. So I remember, you know, he would advise me, and he was a real straight shooter, man. He would like, I remember the first time he ever talked to me, he totally ripped me a new asshole about how terrible I looked, you know.
Oh, wow.
You ever got a compliment from this guy, it was amazing. You know, you knew you were good if you ever got a compliment from him. So he started talking about this older guy. Actually, this guy won the first teenage show I ever went in. His name was Joe Schroeder. And he was good friends with Glenn Kinnear. I don't know if you guys remember Glenn Kinnear. But Glenn Kinnear went on to win the Mr. America in 1986. And at the time, when I was a teenager, Glenn was the man. He was like the best guy in Illinois. He had really good legs. And he was only like 3 or 4 years older than me. But Joe was, let's see, Joe was 19 when I was 16. And Joe was just a genetically gifted bodybuilder. He didn't have the greatest structure, but he was just really thick and massive. I mean, you wouldn't believe this guy was a teenager. And he had such great genetics, and he wouldn't ever train hard. He'd come into the gym, and I remember one time he did like 2 sets of squats and left, you know. And no. I was just such a genetic freak. So Ira told me the story. He goes, Joe Schroeder would have won the Teenage Mr. America, not the Teenage Mr. Illinois, but the Teenage Mr. America 1 year. He goes, he was looking so good. He would have won the whole show, but he got involved with this girl, and she broke his heart, and he dropped out of the show. That scared the shit out of me. When he told me that story, I was like, I'm avoiding women like the plague. And I didn't go near women. I didn't date women. I never had sex all the time. I was in high school, nothing. I just stayed away from women. So I never really had much of a relationship. I never had much history with relationships. And this girl I met, well, I met a girl in 92 and I went out with her for like 3 years, but she wasn't into bodybuilding. She didn't approve of bodybuilding, so that didn't last. And then this girl I met in 96, we moved in together. And that was the first time I ever moved in with a girl. And she had a younger daughter. And of course, she wasn't into bodybuilding at all. Nobody was back then. So I just really lived my life around their life, you know, and I was going out and eating more fast food than I ever ate in my life. And she never cooked, so we never ate at home. And so it was just, I was just totally, totally off the bodybuilding plan. But the relationship literally only lasted like 8 months. So I was only off for like 8 months. So, yeah, and then I decided to get back into it in 98.
No kidding. So what have you learned since then? I mean, you know, I'm sure you've had more relationships since that time. Were you able to ever begin to strike a better balance with the sport and with, you know, outside commitments?
Well, it's crazy now because so many girls are into the sport, you know.
Oh, yeah. The playing field is ripe now, John. That was right.
Yeah. If I was a teenager now, I'd be living it up, you know. You just meet girls at the gym.
Yeah.
But, back then it was different. You know, I remember going out with girls and I'd be dieting for a show and I'd stay home. You know, I wouldn't go out. And, you know, my girlfriend wanted to go out to the bars and she would stop by my house and all dressed up and, you know, say goodbye to me and then go out to the bars, you know.
Oh, wow. So yeah.
It was just that I could never, ever find anybody that was into the sport. And most of the girls I was involved with, they just didn't understand bodybuilding. So, it's obviously different, much, much different now. I mean, you can find a lot more people. Well, the girls are so into bodybuilding now. Well, they're into training, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, the lifestyle, that sort of lifestyle anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, they're always posting pictures of their food and they're training really hard. In fact, I'll tell you, at the gym I go to, I see the girls training much harder than the guys, the younger guys. You know,
A
lot of the guys are on the bench texting and stuff, and the girls are training their ass off. They're really training hard.
Yeah, I see that a lot too. The second half of the book, then, you start to break things down. You start getting into more specifics. You start talking about things like, you know, the final week of preparation. You start talking about things like training. You get into things like posing and tanning, water manipulation, just all sorts of different aspects of competitive bodybuilding. And I find that stuff really fascinating to be able to actually kind of delve in to see what your perspective is, having done this for so long. Can you talk about posing? And you used a term, you said that you can kind of grow into poses.
Yeah, I found that out when I was a teenager. Even though I was competing so often and I was improving my physique year by year, but it wasn't big changes because I think I would have been better off just doing one show a year and spending the rest of the time building my physique. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that every time I competed, it was like I was getting better. I was looking better in the poses, like the front double bicep, front lat spread. So that's what I mean by growing into the poses. I think the more often you do the poses, the better you look in those poses. Hmm. And that's why it's so important for people that are competing to really practice their posing a lot.
Yeah.
It's not about just getting up there for a minute at night. I mean, you really need to practice your posing. And Arnold always preached this, and I know Frank Zane always preached this. The more you pose, the harder you look. And the better you look in those poses. And then you can pick which poses you look the best in, of course, also. But in all the mandatory poses and everything, you learn how to do them better so you look better in those poses. And I just think, you know, when I was younger, the posing was taken a lot more seriously. I remember everybody would start practicing their routine like 8 weeks out. And back then we would have to use the 8-track cassettes, you know.
Oh, wow.
And we'd have to get our music on the 8-track cassette. So it's really hard to have like really good posing music because it was just like one song and then you just had to cut it off, you know.
Yeah.
But
John.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that you mentioned in the book, and I love that you said this, because you said when it comes to being able to pick your poses and working on your poses and working on your posing routines, that you stated in the book, and I strongly agree with this, is that, you know, guys today, they're just picking poses that they like, you know, that might not fit their body at all. But if you're born with a certain bone structure, you've got to emulate. You got to emulate those who are similar to. So you have a big rib cage. You've wide shoulders. You've got deep sweeping pecs and high peak biceps. Who else do you know who's like that? Arnold, right?
Yeah, right.
And so you kind of emulated him in a lot of poses because that's the physique that was most similar to you. Like you wouldn't be up there hitting poses like Muhammad El Makawi or you know, some Frank Zane type poses, because that's not your body, that's not your physique, that's not your structure.
Right.
And you said in the book, you know, I love it you said that, but pick the poses that are right for your body. Because, man, you see it today. I mean, you could see it for the last 20 years, but guys are just, you know, they're entering classic physique now and hitting all these they consider classic physique shots, and they look like clowns. I'll be honest with you. A lot of these guys, they just look silly. Like, you just take a still photo of this and you're like, what the hell is this guy doing? You know, he looks terrible. There's no presentation. He's trying to emulate a body that he certainly does not have.
Right.
You know? And so I just love that point. You know, you got to be able to pick your strengths and work that into your posing routine and emulate someone similar to yourself. And like you did with Arnold. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have a short, or not a short, but you have a sort of narrow shoulders and you're real thick, you should look at someone like Franco or look at someone like Nasser El Sembadi. And if you have, you know, wider shoulders and a smaller waist, then you have to pick somebody who has that kind of physique and do the same kind of poses, because you'll look good in those poses. I would see that. I judged for many, many years in Chicago and the MPC. I was the head judge. I would be the one calling out the poses. And I would see that all the time. Guys would come out and he'd have like a real thick muscular physique, but he was narrow. And he'd come out and he'd start hitting like Frank Zane poses, with poses, you know?
Yeah.
He ruined his chances. You know, he'd become better off coming out and hitting like crunching poses and most muscular poses.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, some guys, they are a fan of the evening show, of their posing routine. I think what we've been talking about so far has been kind of a mix of that and kind of a mix of our mandatory poses. John, do you find yourself to be a fan of the actual routine at night when you're actually posing to music? Some guys just don't like that, and other guys do.
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I mean, that was, for me, that was the favorite part. You know, like I said, when I was young, I was never an athlete, so the competitive part of bodybuilding was kind of stressful to me. But I love performing. I love getting up in front of people. I love, like, doing speeches. So getting up there and doing my posing routine was my time on stage. So I absolutely love that. And I thought I was always a pretty good poser. I always tried to make my routines kind of dramatic, you know. So when I left the stage, people would be like, wow, you know, that's what I was aiming for. You know, that's what I tried to, you know, obviously Arnold was my idol. So I was trying to do Arnold type poses. So I'd do like a front double bicep and then a three quarter back. And the sweeping arm shots, you know, the twisting arm shots and things like that. And they were all poses that suited my physique. And I tried to arrange them in a routine with the right transitions and then have the right music, you know, try to put the poses to the music. Like, I remember one time I posed to Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle.
Nice.
And, you know, the beginning of the song, before he starts singing, the music kind of builds up. So I would always time that to my rear lat spread, which was one of my best poses.
Mm-hmm.
And once, you know, when it got to that right part of the song, I would do the lat spread real slow. And then I would turn around and hit like a hands on hip most muscular or something like that. You know, try to make it as dramatic and as fun as possible so the audience really enjoys it. Because that's the way it should be. You know,
it should be. Yeah, absolutely. That art is lost on today's competitive bodybuilders. It's even at the pro level, you know, there's only like a handful of guys that really take the time to understand their physique and understand the pose. Like you look at a guy like Cedric McMillan, you know, I know that he goes up there and kind of wings it, but you could tell the guy practices because there's certain poses that he'll hit and certain poses he won't hit at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a certain art that's kind of been lost today, especially at the regional and even the national level. You know. Yeah.
I'm sure, John, as a judge, you've probably seen it. You can tell when a guy's put the time in and that they've really worked on their posing. And you know, conversely, you can see it when a guy hasn't been doing enough practice. What do you do, or what have you done for practice? Like, how long do you practice for? How long do you suggest people practice for? And while we're at it, since you have such a cool cross section of knowing so many bodybuilders out there, who in your mind has been like the best at really practicing their poses and putting a lot of work into their program?
I would say right now that Zane Watson is real good. I like him.
Well, yeah.
I just saw Terrence Ruffin's routine from
you. Yes.
Was it the Toronto show? I'm not sure.
Yes, yep, Toronto. Yep.
Yeah.
Super show.
And he won, and that was a great routine.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when we had that lunch together, Breon Ansley was sitting next to Tom Platz, and I was sitting on the other side of Tom. And Tom Platz was giving Breon advice about, I don't think it was about posing, it was just about making an impact when you're on stage, because Tom was really good at that.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys ever saw the video from when he competed in the 1986 Mr. Olympia, which I think was his last Mr. Olympia. The crowd just went so crazy for him, and he wouldn't leave the stage. He kept staying out there.
That's so cool.
And he said that was like the one moment. He said the two greatest moments in his bodybuilding career was the 81 Olympia, of course, and that moment, because he connected so much with the audience. And it was like, so, like he said, he went backstage and Arnold said, "Wow, what the hell did you do?"
Wow.
You
know,
that's fucking cool.
So he tried to tell Breon about that, you know. And then one point I made to Breon was I said, I see a lot of these classic physique guys who are doing like Frank Zane poses and stuff. And they're trying, I could see they're trying to have good posing routines, which is great. But I go, you have to do it to your individual style. You know, everybody has a unique physique. And everybody has their own style. And if you go back to the 70s and look at Frank Zane and Boyer Coe and Albert Beckles and Ed Corney and all those guys did poses that were unique to their physique.
Right.
And
right.
They put together posing routines that were unique to their physique. So when they came out, like Arnold and Jim Lorimer, when I started going to the Mr. Olympia in the late 70s, they would start the show off. They had like these Greek columns, these or Roman columns or whatever. And the guys would step up, and they'd be in the silhouette. I'm sure you guys have seen that
before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
Yeah. And they would hit one pose, and the whole audience would scream, "Zane!"
Right. You knew exactly what that was. That's right.
Signature.
That's right.
Right. Signature poses. So they had, like, Boyer Coe had that signature arm pose where he put both of his arms out, you know. Mm-hmm. And you just knew it was him from the silhouette. And Frank Zane, too, with the overhead pose, you know.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Everybody knew who these guys were because they developed their own style. And that's what's really lacking in pro bodybuilding. But with classic physique, I hope these guys start to develop their own style and their own individual poses. So when you see that pose, you say, oh, that's Chris Bumstead, or that's Breon Ansley or whoever, or Terrence Ruffin.
That's a great point.
That's their pose, you know.
That's a great point. That's not, you know, this guy doing a Frank Zane pose, you know, that's
right.
This guy doing his own thing. I think that's amazing. I bet we'll see that in time. I've got a question for you about the pump up process. Now, John, if given the opportunity, would you pump up A, right by the curtain where you're closest to getting on stage, B, somewhere mixed in the crowd, or C, in the foyer of the women's restroom?
See,
tell us about that.
Yeah, that happened to me a couple times where you try to do the psych out process, you know, and you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I remember when I competed in Miami at the Southern States contest in 1987, there was like 26 heavyweights. And I remember there was more heavyweights than anybody else. And back then that was there was no super heavyweights. It was just heavyweights. So that was 198 and up. And I think I weighed 208 for that show. And there was a lot of big dudes. I mean, a lot of big guys. And I was competing in Florida for the first time. I'm from Chicago. And I remember my brother would go with me to all of my shows, and I was freaking out. I'm like, oh, my God, these guys are huge. But it was like they were wearing clothing, you know, when we went to check in, where they looked big, you know, but they didn't necessarily look good on stage. They just looked big in their clothes. So my brother's trying to keep me calm. He was a very rational guy, and he's like, just relax. You don't know what these guys look like on stage. And he was right, because I ended up taking second place. But when we were pumping up, it was at the Jackie Gleason Theater in Miami, and there was like all these little dressing rooms. And so the big dressing room where everybody was pumping up, it was all these heavyweights, and they're bumping into each other, and they're oiling up and trying to pump up. So we got out of there. We went to a smaller dressing room, and there was only one other guy in there. So I pumped up. I took my warm-ups off. My brother put the oil on me. And then I went back into that big room, and everybody was looking at me like, whoa, who the fuck is this guy, you know?
Yeah.
So when I did the Natural Illinois in 92, we did the same thing. It was like really crowded. There was a lot of people in there. So I left and I went upstairs, and they had a woman's bathroom and a men's bathroom. And then there was like another room in front of the bathroom. It was like the foyer. So I went in there and I just started pumping up, and I had my partner with me, and he was helping me pump up and stuff. And I remember women were coming to the bathroom like, is this the right bathroom? And I'm like, yeah, it's right in there, you know. And they were passing by. So then, like, right before everybody went on stage, we went back downstage, and I got in line, you know, to go on stage. And everybody's like, whoa, where'd he come from? You know, and I was all oiled, all pumped up. So it's like that little psychological thing you do.
That's great.
John, over the course of now I don't mean to tell the audience how old you are or anything, but – over the course of now four decades of competing, right. What have you learned? What's made the most impact? Like, what have you learned that's made the most impact for your bodybuilding career over the course of these last four decades? Has it been something diet weight related, or something mentally that you learned, or what? Like, what has been the greatest asset?
Wow, that's a good question.
That's a big one too.
Yeah. As far as like making progress and stuff, I still believe and I still follow, you know, what I did to make my body in the first place, which is just sticking to the basic movements, barbells and dumbbells, you know, the stuff we used in the 1970s, and just sticking with the basic exercises. To build mass, you got to use 6 to 8 reps, really, you know, and the heaviest weights possible for the basic movements. I don't believe in a lot of machines or isolation movements. I didn't then.
Nice.
I don't now.
Nice.
And I see that big mistake being made by a lot of guys in the gym. You know, guys who don't have any muscle and they're doing all these little cable movements and stuff. And it's like, I don't know. They're just seeing the stuff on YouTube, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's – and then just, you know, having enough time to prepare for contest. I mean, the one mistake I made when I was a teenager was I was competing too often. And then when I got into my 20s and 30s, I was doing it right, where I was like picking one show a year and I train all year just for that one show. So that was like my birthday or my Christmas was the day I competed, because that was the one day of the year I trained all year for, you know. And that was – it was really a rewarding sport for me. It was, you know, a lot of hard work, but I was very passionate about it. I was doing what I love to do, and it was always great, you know, to compete. And the best compliment I could ever get at any show was when someone in my peer group, whether it was a judge or someone in the audience or another even competitor, would come up and say, wow, that's the best you ever looked, or you really made progress from last year. You know, so even if you don't win the contest, if you at least do that, if that happens, that's very, very rewarding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a sport where we don't make any money, obviously. It's just really out of passion.
Yeah.
A passion project. We're just trying to build our bodies. You know, it's just like an individual routine. We go on an individual trip, and that's what we're all trying to do. And it really never ends. If you're a bodybuilder, it never ends. I mean, I'm 55 now and I'm still trying to improve my body. I'm dieting now for photo shoots, and I'm trying to look better than I did the last time I did a photo shoot. Mm-hmm. It's a continuous process and it never ends. It's really addicting, but it's a great addiction, you know.
So absolutely. Great. John, I got one more question for you. Now, you are the natty guy. You're the natty guy that I always looked up to. When I started competing, you were one of the guys that I always looked up to. I was like, "Man, this guy looks fucking phenomenal. He looks like Arnold. He's natty. I should be able to do this too, you know." But I had to ask you, what have you ever had blood work done? Over the course of this, I'm sure you have, but I mean, like your hormones and stuff. What do you know? What your actual test level was in your prime?
No, I wish I would have had blood work done back then. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't think anybody was really doing that. So,
yeah.
But no, I don't. I wish I would have known what it was in like '96 or '98
when you were at your biggest kind of thing.
Obviously, it's much, much different now because I remember in '96 I was eating all those calories. I got the 243 pounds. And then I competed at 208, and there's no way people believe I was natural back then, but I was. It's just, you know, that's what I try to tell these younger guys now. It's so weird the way it is now with the internet, and everybody's talking about drugs. And I think the bad thing about that is that when younger kids get involved in it, they think right off the bat you have to use drugs to build muscle. And I try to tell the younger guys, I'm like, man, your hormones are at your highest level right now.
Right.
You need drugs to build muscle. You got to work hard, though. You got to go into the gym and push yourself, you know. When I was in California last week, I was talking to Rich Minzer, who was he used to be a manager at Gold's. And he bought a lot of the equipment for Gold's and stuff. So he's been around forever. So we did an interview with him. And Tom Platz was there, and he was talking to Tom. He goes, "Tom, remember when you squatted 315 for 10 minutes?" And Tom's like, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "That was unbelievable." He goes, "You never see that shit today, you know?" He goes, "He must have did 50 reps or 60 reps." He goes, "He collapsed on the floor when it was done." You know, so it's the hard training, you know? You got to push yourself harder and harder and harder. And Tom is giving these squat clinics now, and he'll, like, go through squatting routines with these people. So they'll warm up and they'll do a bar, you know, they'll do a weight that they can do for like 10 reps, and they get to 10. He's like, "Do five more." Then mm-hmm. they do five more, and he goes, "Do five more." So there was a guy from Old School Labs that did it, and he normally does 10 reps. He did like another 18 reps.
Wow. You know,
that's awesome.
It's unbelievable how you can push yourself when you really want it, you know, and that's what it's really all about is you got to train hard and you got to eat a lot of food. And you got to do the right exercises, but it's not all about drugs. And I wish some of these young guys would get that into their heads, you know, and stop believing that it's all drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, man. This is awesome. We really appreciate you coming on, John, and sharing with us your stories, sharing with us your insight. This has been really cool. Thank you for being here.
Hey, and I want to thank you guys too for the podcast reviews you do every week. I think you're the only ones that do that. So, you know, it's great that you're giving, you know, mentions to all these other podcasts, and you're giving notoriety to these other people that are doing podcasts. So thank you guys for doing that.
Well, speaking of podcasts, why don't you tell us about your show? Tell us about where we can reach you there, and tell us about everything else. Tell us about where they can get the book, the other books, and everything else you've got going on.
Right.
Yeah, it's a Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So they can subscribe on iTunes, or they can go to my website, which is Bodybuilding Legends Show. And my three books that I just recently published on Amazon are Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, which is selling really well. That's the stories about the 1970s competition, so Arnold and Sergio and all those guys. And my other book was the MP6 Workout, which is the workout program that I'm following now. And the last one is The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. And they're all on Amazon.com. And I wrote another book called Natural Bodybuilding, which was released in 2005. And that was published by Human Kinetics. I still have some of those copies available. It's no longer being published, so it's kind of a collector's edition, I guess. But I think you can also get it on Amazon.com. And I have a new website called Dad Bod to Rip Bod.
Rip Bod,
and that's Dad Bod to Rip Bod with the number 2. And I'm doing my training and diet consultations on there. So anybody who's interested in getting a training or nutrition consultation with me, they can go to dadbod2ripbod.com and do it there.
That's so cool. VJ, is there anything else we're missing here?
No, I'm good, man. I think I asked John everything I wanted to ask him. I'm sure some stuff will, once we hang up, I'll be like, "Oh fuck, I wanted to ask him about this." You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, John, once again, thanks for coming back, man. Thank you for talking with us. This has definitely been our pleasure, and I'm certain that the Advices audience is really going to appreciate this.
All right, Scott. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, DJ. I appreciate you guys having me on the show. I really do.
Man, thanks for coming on. This has been so much fun for me.
All right. Take care, guys.
Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with VJ Peary and John Hansen. I'll see you soon.
Radio Network.